This is the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and after a news summary, we'll have more about the relationship between Washington and Delhi, the continuing repercussions of the weekend's elections in Burma as thousands flee fighting between the military and Karen rebels, and we'll hear what's hoped for from an inquiry into failings in the British National Health Service.
So you and I know in future that if we put somebody into a hospital, they are going to be safe.
Those stories to come here on the BBC World Service from London.
BBC News with Nick Kelly. President Obama has announced his support for India's bid for permanent peace. You gotta do what you be doing, so you better get to it. I hear you saying it seems all right when you're ordering a bad influence. Spend all your money getting so convinced that you never even thought of us. Sometimes I wonder if we're living in the same land. Why'd you wanna be my friend when I feel like the children running out of hands? Welcome to the working week. Oh, welcome to the working week.
Red. It's too damn high. Order. Red. It's too damn high. Order. I tried to fix it on October 6th. They told me no, my feelings were mixed. I'm gonna keep going no matter what. Rent's too damn high, no ifs, ands, or buts. I'm gonna fight as hard as I can to win this election, I hope you understand. They took damn out our party name. Yeah, it ain't gonna be the same, but it all right. It's just too damn high. Party. Rent. It's too damn high. Party. When you cast your vote on November 3rd, you're gonna see rent is too high. That's us. Look. On line one, I. Rent is too high, that's us. They took damn out our party name. They took it completely out. Damn, man. But that's us. Vote for us November 3rd. They took damn out our party name. They took damn out our party name.
Yes, Jimmy, sing it. Well, that was a public service announcement from Jimmy McMillan before the election that just passed in the States that everybody's talking about. Well, almost everybody. Well, the Canadian media anyway, because we don't let's just say we don't have elections. Oh, we definitely do have elections. Anyway, that's Jimmy McMillan from the Rent is Too Damn High party, and he was trying to make a point that they took damn out of the party name. So in case you didn't know, when you were looking at the ballot, you had to vote Rent is Too High. That's them. And actually, Jimmy McMillan's got an album coming out any minute, actually, as far as I understand it. The album's coming out very soon, so watch out for that. I don't know if it's strictly internet only or what, but very entertaining. I think so anyway. That's... yeah, good stuff. Reminds me of Wesley Willis, sort of, in some weird way. Welcome to the working week. It is Monday, or if you're listening on the repeat, it's next Monday in the morning. My name is Scotty Hertz, and I'm in the house, and I had one of those days, so we'll let that go. So if I seem a bit disjointed, well, so it goes. Such is life. So if you haven't heard, you haven't seen the posters around town, you haven't been hit with something off the Facebook or however you get your information, teletype, the Joey Only Outlaw Band are finally coming to town. I spoke to Joey earlier this year when he was on the western leg of his tour, and he's now on the eastern swing coming to a town near you. He's going to be in Guelph on Friday night, and he will be in Kitchener on Saturday night. So for our friends in Kitchener and surrounding area, and of course in Guelph. I'll give you the details now. I've been working on a public service announcement or whatever, but it will be at Norfolk United upstairs. A lot of you have been there. There's been CFRU events there before. It's accessible. There's an elevator off Church Lane, and that will be the doors. Doors will be open at 7:30. The show starts at 8. The cost is $7 to $15 sliding scale. No one will be turned away. And special guests will be Scott Dunbar, one-man band, who's also in the Outlaw Band, and Guelph's own Love and Guts, or perhaps Love, or maybe Guts, or both, some, all, none of the above. So, so that's Friday, November 12th at Norfolk United Church. And I'm going to play the interview that I had with Joey in the spring, just to sort of give you a refresher of what Hair Only is about. And a really good guy. He's been to town before. He's been to town several times before, actually, and the last time he was here was with Ann Feeney in April of last year. And sadly, Ann Feeney's not very well right now. For those of you that know her music, a lot of you do, listen to the show and listen to the Labor Show as well. Ann is she's got fairly serious cancer. She's fighting like hell, by the way. Of course, as we know, Ann is not the type of woman to she takes no crap. How's that? So, anyway, here's Joey Only from the spring, and this will probably take us up the rest of the show, and it'll be a Friday night, so let's hear what Joey has to say about his tour and about the working life and all that kind of stuff. So, here he is.
I turned 29 on a Greyhound bus, driving in the northern night. Eyes were closed and it was dark outside, for I was never seen other light. Traveling all around on a passenger bus is the story of my sorry life. Turned 29 on a Greyhound bus, I never knew the hour or the time. It was 3 in the morning when we crossed the line up over top the Great Divide. So was phone on the April night and it was freaking cold outside. I was returning to Alberta because at the time it had been spring back up there for a month. I left the West Coast because I hate the rain when the records and blizzard come up. There's a storm in my soul and an empty hole. The winds are blowing and the weather's cold. And I got no home through the north I roam. Singing folk songs and terrible poems. I turned 29 on a Greyhound bus, driving in the northern night. Turned 29 on a Greyhound ship. I never knew the hour or the time. When I got home to Nanton in the afternoon, that blizzard, it was piling high. So Lance 3, he went off to Mexico, and Tammy Oss was playing all night. The winds are blowing, and the bar was empty when everybody stayed home inside. Was the big bad blizzard 2008, but the prairie farmers call it alright. Then you hear the moisture, you see. Oh, why, there's a birthday gap. Traveling on a bus in a northern night. And why is there a blizzard on April 8th? I guess Alberta kinda works that way. I turned 29 on a Greyhound bus, driving in a northern night. Turned 29 on a Greyhound ship, I never knew the hour or the time. What time was it, Jeff? And the East Coast is hot, and Alberta's what the coast they are not. I turned 29 on a Greyhound bus. My life, it was always in flux. And I got no hometown anymore. There's a thousand I can call my own. When the earth is traveling beneath my feet, the only beast that I'll ever know. I turned 29 on a Greyhound night. The blizzard, it was in me as us outside. And I was all alone where I had no friends. Wonder when my life's journey's might end. I turned 29 on a Greyhound bus, driving in the northern night. Turned 29 on a Greyhound ship, I never knew the hour or the time. I turned 29 on a Greyhound ship, never knew the hour, the time. I never knew the hour, the time. I never knew the hour, the time.
And that was Joey Only and the Outlaw Band from Transgression Trail, the newest release from the Joey Only Outlaw Band. Perhaps the kickinest, boot thumpinest Kung Fu Country CD to come through the station in years, maybe even ever. And I'm very pleased, as you can hear, to welcome to the program Joey Only, direct from somewhere on the road in Edmonton, Alberta. Welcome to the show, Joey.
Hey, thanks very much for having me on today.
You're in the middle of an extensive tour of the West. To describe your tour as epic, I guess, would be a bit of an understatement.
It is pretty big. We're doing, at this leg, before we go home, we're going to be doing 43 shows in 49 days. Holy. So I guess you could call that epic. Then we'll get home, and the month of August, we have a bunch of festivals we're still doing. Meanwhile, I'm going to be working probably 40 hours a week and hitting the festivals at the same time. So
wow.
It's a long summer.
I actually had to get a map out and kind of plot out all these places you've been to, and you're heading like a good old-fashioned map, not a Google map, right? So
yeah.
Is this a normal tour for the Outlaw Band? It seems like a really full dance card, and you said you're working too, so.
Well, the thing is that, I guess it is kind of normal for us. That's why we were able to play so many of those towns, that we've done it so many times, right? Been through them again and again and again, that when we want to get a gig on whatever night we want, a lot of the times we can pull that off now. We seem to have enough of our name around that getting gigs is getting to be easier and easier and easier. And really, we don't want to ever have a day we're not playing. So if we have to drive a couple more hours to have a gig some night, we'll do that. You know, we're a pretty relentless band. One thing about us is that we like to play, and we like to play a lot. We don't like to take set breaks very much even. We often get up and play for 2 or 3 hours and play a lot of original songs. So, you know, I'm really proud of my band. They act very professionally, and they're very dedicated.
And I take it a lot of the towns that you go to don't see a lot of bands coming through necessarily. It must make for a different dynamic than, say, other places you might play on the beaten path.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I kind of made the switch 10 years ago to folk music, and I guess now it's sort of developed into rockabilly, psychabilly country or something. I don't know what you'd call it. I just call it my music, I guess. But, you know, I was thinking, like, back then, I want to be able to take my guitar anywhere and play anywhere, be able to talk to people and break through to them on ideas and subjects, you know, and you can't do that in Saskatchewan in a punk rock band, you know, like,
yep.
We want to go, so that's what we do now. We play little towns sometimes, and everybody comes out from their farms and out of the woods or out of the mountains, or depends where we are, right?
Yeah, and you'd mentioned on your blog that you had some shows canceled due to flooding? Is that?
Well, yeah, the West has been just getting crazy weather this last few weeks, eh? And Medicine Hat got flooded out, and Maple Creek did, then it washed out Highway 1. So for a whole week, there was no Trans-Canada Highway through the prairies, which is pretty much the major artery. Like, you could take the Highway 16, but it's two lanes for a long time, whereas the Trans-Canada, like the 401 out here, you know.
Yeah, so that pretty much shut everything down for a while.
You can just go.
Right. And
so, there was that, and we've been coming through thunderstorms and tornadoes and hail. And
wow.
I guess today in Saskatchewan, there's another big flood that happened last night, and now there's more tornadoes there today. Weather's nice in Edmonton today, though, but driving through a lot of...
All on a day's work for a touring West Coast musician, eh? It's just up in the mountains,
yeah.
Frantic weather.
Well, so, if you start driving 6 hours a day or 4 hours a day through the prairies, you're going to, at this time of year, run into that kind of weather, and I personally love it. That's why we're doing it now.
Yeah, and you've packed a lot of living, a lot of traveling, and, you know, climbing the mountains, I guess, and a whole lot of playing in your 30 years, and that's kind of reflected in the songs on the album, and yet... it's kind of one of the shortest songs on the album, Greyhound Guitar Man. It does a great job of telling like a condensed version of your life story.
Sort of does. It makes mention of quite a few things. It was actually a song about a tour I did. I made a movie about 4 years ago, and it was about this tour. It's called No Glam Rock Country Star. And, I mean, it's not very well known, but, you know, we sold copies here and there, and people like it. So I had to write a few songs that kind of reflected that tour on there. And during the time, I was still recovering from tuberculosis. I was on the road with Ray Spoon. We went to Halifax. You know, so all those things get mentioned in there. And, but really, yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm getting for being a songwriter is that I've gone out and lived life, really done that. I've never been a stay-at-home person too much. I don't want to sound ridiculous either, but, like, I've gone and climbed, like, 80 mountains and I chased tornadoes in the prairies and photographed them, and I had tuberculosis. I played 1,000 shows across the country. I have so many great experiences to draw on. I was an activist. I spent time in jail for, and even was involved with an action that happened in Guelph there at the university back in the year 2001.
Oh, wow.
Against tuition. There was an occupation of the...
Oh, there you go. So you're well acquainted with our town.
I am.
Yes.
I have quite a few friends in Guelph. I mean, I'm not really doing that kind of stuff so much anymore, but yet my friends are still getting arrested in Toronto.
Well, I was going to ask you that, actually. I'm sure that you're being out on tour. You've been following closely what's been going on with the G20 and probably hearing from people you know, and also following in the media, whichever media you choose, I guess, what's been going on. What's your view on that? I guess, were you, like, chomping at the bit to get out here but couldn't?
Well, no, you couldn't pay me to go into that hornet's nest, really. Unfortunately, what they're doing is they're clamping down so hard on people that people can't dissent whatsoever. So it's forcing people to react with rage, right? And an example that's really close to my heart right now is that the RBC Bank in Ottawa on Bank Street was burned a month ago, and now a really good friend of ours has been framed up on that. And I'm sure it's a frame because the guy's 59 years old with a bad heart. Like, he's had heart attacks. He's not the kind of guy who's running out of burning buildings. But what's happening is people who've got histories of being outspoken and being direct action-oriented are being targeted now. My friend Harsha was arrested last weekend in Toronto on trumped-up charges, then released, and the charges were dropped. Another friend of mine, Amy Miller, was charged the same way. Then the charges were dropped, and she was released after being in a dog kennel for a number of hours in police super jail there, right?
And that seems to be the recurring theme coming out of this, is that if you were, you know, walking by or... You know, TTC people, pizza delivery, joggers, plus also, you know, a good chunk of activists were just getting, they were just hauling everybody in, and then it turns out the 5-meter rule was completely bogus.
Well, the most ridiculous abuse of judicial power in Canadian history was the October crisis that happened in Quebec back in the 70s, right? Mm-hmm. And even then, they didn't arrest 800 people, 900 people, you know?
I remember back...
When Mike Harris was in power, and we had big demonstrations against him in Toronto, and one of them was called Defeat Harris, and everyone organized from everywhere in Ontario went there, and there was 800 riot cops. And I remember seeing the 800 riot cops that day, and it was so intimidating. There were so many of them. This was 5,500. Like, this is ratcheting up the agenda, right? And that's what Harper wants. And here you have Tony Clement, who used to be in Harris's cabinet, and now he's a national authority, and his riding just had a G8 in it, and all his buddies are buying new Beamers now because they all got rich off of it.
Yep, there was quite the amount of stimulus thrown up there just to get a few more votes by the sounds of it, I think.
Yeah, you know, it's like you don't need to do that kind of stuff. Like, you could have taken a G8 onto a ship in the middle of the ocean and had a meeting there, and it would have cost nothing for security but the boat you're on, right? Like, they didn't need to do it in downtown Toronto. They instigated a fight. Harper wanted that fight. He wants, you know, he's so crazy. The guy is so sick.
Well, yeah, it was one of the first things he mentioned at his press conference. Was like, you see, we needed to spend all that money. It was like it seemed to me to be like a setup of the highest order. So,
yeah, you know, if they'd just done things normally and planned things better, there would have been very little windows being smashed and cops' cars burning in protests. I mean, they forced the issue to be... People have to respond to something when it's that in your face, because if you stop responding, then you really are in the Nazi Germany. then everybody was afraid to do anything. So you sit here with the benefit of history on your side, and you look at those people, and why didn't you do something? You knew this was happening in your town. You know, you say that. But, you know, even when we're in a much, much less dangerous situation here, people are still afraid to do anything.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you a question, a West Coast question, I guess. You're a healthcare worker in the downtown east side, and you sort of mentioned on your album and your song the ghetto birds sort of life in the Maine and Hastings area, of mm-hmm. which, you know, a lot of people out east really don't have a concept of, but... Recently, there was actually an excellent spotlight in Our Times magazine. You've probably seen it, some of the great work that's being done in that area. And I wanted to ask you, because there's very little in the mainstream, of course, for obvious reasons, what effect did the Olympics, the recent Olympics have, or the Winter Olympics have on that neighborhood? Because from what we did here, it changed things very little, and in many ways, it made things a lot worse for people in the downtown east side.
I don't know. The downtown east side is always the downtown east side. I don't know if it changed anything or not. I mean, the neighborhood's slowly gentrifying.
But there wasn't an acceleration because of the Olympics, or that was what was implied. There was
somewhat.
This sort of mass clearance of people out.
But also, you have 5,000 injection drug users in one little neighborhood, and you just can't get rid of them because there's nowhere for them to go. I mean, injection drug users have very specific needs, and they need the pharmacies. They need to rent places that welfare can afford them. You know, and so that's what we do at the Portland Hotel Society. I mean. I've worked in the injection site, I've worked in hotels. Now I'm working the new Woodward's Project, which is a gentrification of the neighborhood, really. But we have 120 units that are just beautiful, and people who never had anything their whole lives are now living in these wonderful apartments for $350 a month. And there's a change in people I've seen in just a few weeks since, it's been 5 months now since the project really opened. But the change in people in just the first few weeks alone was, we never smile, we're always smiling.
I actually didn't realize that. Wasn't that building a subject of a squat like about 10 years ago?
Yes, and I was at the time.
Were you not, you were involved at the time?
I was. I was out. I left Ontario after what was the Pope squat in Toronto, and I came west. I worked at Lake Louise for a while, ski resort where I'd had jobs before, and then went to Hornby Island for a while and did a trimming job in a cabin, trimming some buds. And then around October 26th, I decided I was going to go to Vancouver and try to get a bus ticket to go home. So I went to the squat to check it out, and I ended up getting very sick while I was in Vancouver. My body wasn't really used to the West Coast weather, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I sort of became a British Columbian. It wasn't a planned thing. I really wanted to come back to Ontario. I actually love Ontario. I'd live there if I could.
So something has actually come, you know, over the course of, I guess, 10 years, something's happened with the Woodward's building. It's like...
It was demolished and rebuilt.
Oh, it was demolished. Oh, I see. I didn't realize that.
Totally demolished and totally rebuilt with, you know, London Drugs in the bottom and 120 social housing units and then two other buildings that are part of the complex that people spent $500,000 to $2 million on their part, you know, that kind of stuff. And,
right.
But yeah, we do have 120 units of social housing. And as I say, the people who are living in there are just, you know, a lot of them never had anything in their whole life as nice as a place like that.
So you see it as a positive result?
Well, I'm just saying there always is some positive, that's all.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I could analyze it either way, depending on what I wanted you to think, you know?
Sure.
But there's always going to be some positive. There's always going to be some negatives. I mean, but the neighborhood's still the neighborhood, you know? We just had a woman who lived in our building for a long time, and the Portland building herself just died last week. A kid who was part of the squat, Casper, he was moved to Edmonton but died of an asthma attack last week. And that's the nature of that neighborhood, is that I've seen a lot of death while working there.
There's been a lot of casualties.
Yeah.
You kind of mentioned on your album, too, that quite a few of your friends have passed in the recent years, I guess.
If only I'd known, well, just in last year alone, if only I'd known how many more were going to have passed, I could have actually tripled the number of names that are in that,
wow,
that sleeve since you put that to print four or five months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's... one of them was our friend Tempest. I mean, she's not a downtown Eastside person, but she was an amazing musician who was murdered on Hornby Island, and that was just awful. It was so awful. So it really was a hard year for that. And actually, what we're doing, you know, the song One Last Song that's on the record there,
mm-hmm,
that's a really important song, because what it's about is not taking life for granted and not being complacent and not just sitting around and waiting for things to come to you, but go out there and make it happen, because... you know, the things I've been through, I've been struck by lightning, I've had tuberculosis, like, I don't know why I'm alive and they're not, you know?
And you fought a bear at some point, or had an encounter with a bear.
I did get attacked by a bear at my hunting camp, and I was going to beat her to death, I was so angry.
But it obviously worked out for both you and the bear.
Yeah, well...
And that was in Ontario, is that right? Here?
We have a hunting camp up a ways north of Madoc, my mom, about 8 clicks from my mom's house down a dirt road.
Uh-huh.
It's way back in the bush, and yeah, I kind of stirred her up, and her cubs went up the tree, and she came running at me, and
wow.
I said, no, you don't. I can't really imitate what I did. It'd be hard to explain. I have a battle cry that no animal has ever stood up to, I'll just say that. And, you know, I've always been a bush person. I grew up in the bush. I never, even as a kid, it was me and my dog wandering everywhere. I never thought, as a child, what if I run into a bear or a moose today? I was usually more concerned, what if I run into a skunk?
Right.
You know.
That's most people are, yeah.
You know, so... But yeah, then she stalked me for 24 hours, and I just sat in the cabin and waited till I knew where she was. It was pretty neat.
Wow, yeah.
You know? And, yeah, I've seen everything back there. Bears, fishers, which are just crazy weasels. You wouldn't believe them. They're huge. Moose and elk, and there's cougar in there. Absolutely.
North of Madoc,
wolves.
Really?
Oh yeah, you'd never know.
No,
yeah,
I was going to say, yeah.
There's the eastern cougar. They said it was extinct, and they realized 15 years ago it's not. And they see them everywhere up around Mom's house. So
it's just in there, sort of stealth, waiting for the
well,
surprise.
That bush
somebody.
Is, Yeah. That bush is so ugly back there. I mean, it's just thick, thick bush, and it's you get back in there, it's hot. There's swamps everywhere. There's bugs everywhere. You try going looking for a cougar that's, I mean, they don't, they know how not to be seen.
For sure.
They've been a part of that Monty Python sketch.
That's right. So I hope you don't mind this observation, but I find a certain, well, we'll call it a Canadian-ness in your album, and I don't mean that in the conventional kind of flag-waving sense, but just in the sense of living the turf we live on, like you're saying about the woods and whatnot. And I'm thinking in particular of your song, The Honky Tonk Hockey. It kind of lamenting that it's more affordable to see a hockey game in Nashville than in Ontario in Canada. So is that, were you in Nashville at some point? Like,
no, but my friend, I mentioned Linda McRae. She moved down there. She used to play in Spirit of the West.
She's
a really good friend of mine. She plays banjo and accordion and bass and just writes beautiful songs, Linda does. And you know, she's one of those people who sometimes I get embarrassed because she just loves me so much and says such nice things. After a while, I can't take anymore. Like, Linda, you got to stop. Like,
so, yeah,
you know, so, but you need those people when you're a young musician, the older generation who.
For sure, the elders.
Just tell you how great you are all the time. And, that's probably why I'm doing this now, because of people like her. And Ann Feeney is another person like that in my life who has always left money under my pillow and when she's over. And I'm always cursing her, Ann, stop doing that. leaves the money with someone at the gig and then takes off. And then they come and tell me, Ann said to give this to you. Ah!
Like the kindly aunt. I have an aunt that works like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I also take it they're not. It's elsewhere in the album you mentioned the, quote, assholes in Nashville, which is, to me, seemed like a bit of a jab at the state of country music.
It is.
I don't know. From the album, I got the impression that you'd been to Nashville, but I guess spiritually you've been to Nashville, as I suppose we all have at some point, right? But,
well, you know, a lot of my heroes were there, Waylon Jennings and a lot of my heroes were barred from there and blacklisted there. You know, I don't have any delusions. I know, like, people said to me sometime this last week in an interview, they said, do people compare you to Hank III? And I said, Hank who?
Hank,
you know,
Hank III.
We don't need them. You know, we got Stompin' Tom.
For sure.
We got the North.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just playing with this American band, and the guy said to me, like, well, you can come down to the States with us sometime and see some real country music. And I said, real country music? You don't even have country anymore. You got a Walmart every 6 kilometers. Like, you know, what do you have to tell us about country living? You know,
exactly,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I drive this country. It's empty, man. There's still a lot of Canada that's got nothing going on in it. And people here know what isolation is. They know what dark nights are. They know what the cold is. They're tough people up here. And, you know, I don't really like to call myself a Canadian, I guess, because I'm a Canuck for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I love the North. I love the land. I like the people. I'm proud of what we are and the fact that we're not Americans. You know, maybe we'd be... We could have been anything, you know, but at least we're not that. So, yeah, we're very strictly as a band. We sing Canadian music. If we do cover songs, we often sing Canadian relevant songs. We don't cover Hank III, really. We don't care about him. And it's not that I don't like him, but I don't need him. Like,
yeah, you have your own trail to blaze, I guess.
Yeah, and I've like a tour with his best friends. Like, I know his crew, but I'm not worshiping those people. We don't have to look up to anybody. That's just how I feel about Canada as a country. You know, there's a lot of problems here, but there's a lot of really great things about it. And you know, whenever bands come over from other countries and we tour with them, they just can't believe like how far we're driving and how little that has happened. You know, they just can't believe it. We have so much space, so much resources, so much of everything. You know, it's a really fantastic place, and it's wild, a lot of it, roaming with moose and bugs, and it's extreme. You have to be really, you know, and that's what I like about it. It's so extreme that only 34 million people live here, as opposed to down south where there's 300.
10 times as many, yeah.
You know.
So I take it you're going to take a bit of a breather after your tour. Can we expect the Outlaw Band out on Tearaway sometime this year? Or?
Certainly, yeah. I think we're making plans to be there in November.
And it's all true. They are going to be here in November. I sort of cut the tail end of that interview off because we only got a minute left. But yeah, as you've heard, they're coming in November. They're going to be here. They'll be here on Friday. Friday, November 12th, Norfolk United, upstairs. And wow, I don't think I've ever dedicated my whole show to a show. So now I've done it. It's done. It's gone done. So I hope you enjoyed that interview, and I hope you enjoy the show on Friday when it happens. So I can leave you now with the BBC, because there's no time. Thanks for joining me here on The Working Week. My name is Scotty Hertz, and we'll be here next week. Take care, and have a good week.